Of the candidates running for Alaska's lone seat in the U.S. House, the focus is on the two frontrunners, the incumbent and the newcomer to politics, independent Elise Galvin. What prompted her decision to jump into a race with a formidable opponent, and what does she plan to advocate for if she's elected to be Alaska's next member of Congress? Elise Galvin is on hand to describe what she'd fight for and answer questions today on Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. Who is Elise Galvin, and why does she want to be your next U.S. House member? Alaska has only one U.S. congressional seat, and Republican Don Young has occupied that position since 1973. Today, we're hearing from his challenger. Elise Galvin is in the studio to make her case for your vote. Ms. Galvin, hello.
Hi there. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for being on. I want to let listeners know that we offered Don Young time on Talk of Alaska, but his campaign declined to schedule him for this program. Mr. Young will be on hand for debate for the state on Friday, October 26th at 7 p.m. for a live debate with Ms. Galvin that will air statewide on radio and television. You can join the conversation today, Alaskans, with Elise Galvin. If you have questions about her platform or what you would want her to focus on if she is elected, give us a call statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. If you're calling in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. All right, so Elise, for listeners who are not familiar with your campaign, give us some background. What work and life experience do you have that makes you confident in your ability to be a member of Congress?
Yeah, I think the primary message is that I'm all in Alaskan, and I have more passion for Alaska than I think anybody I know. So my family did come up here in World War II serving, and that's how I ended up here. They stayed on as builders, as butchers, bankers, auto mechanics, a little bit of everything. And my dad ended up working on the slope, and that's when was sort of how my family deteriorated. I ended up in a family with a lot of addictions, and I think things that a lot of Alaskans have experienced, everything from mental illness to a lot of domestic violence. And so my family split up. I went south for schooling. I came up every summer working, and I have put myself through school, through college. So I've done everything from construction up here to a lot of waitressing. I owned a couple of small businesses, and I've also managed a large hotel. So I've done a little bit of everything, but my biggest job has been raising my four kids. I came back up here after college with my husband, and we raised our family here. So I have invested a lot of time, and I certainly want to make sure that the next generation has their kids here, and that's what I wish for everyone in Alaska. And that means that we have some work to do to set our state up for each and every generation here on after to be ready and have the life that we did, which was a pretty great opportunity here in Alaska.
So you were born in Alaska?
I was born in Riverside, California, my mom graduated from West High in 1960. She went south for schooling, put in air quotes, and she ended up meeting someone and getting pregnant and came back up here with me at 2 months old.
All right. So you've been here your whole life.
There you go.
Other than a couple of months.
Yeah.
So on your website, you write that you're ready to put partisan politics aside mm-hmm. to find solutions to challenges. How do you think that can happen in such hyper-partisan times?
Well, I think it has to happen. We've reached that brink. I think Alaskans have experienced it up here where we didn't really see anything move until there was a bipartisan coalition. And then we started. They still have a lot of work to do, believe me. But when we see, you know, people auguring in on one side or the other and holding up their ideology as being more important than anything else, we really don't see people getting anything done. And so 12 years ago, I just got really tired of that and became independent. And I think we're at a place right now in our nation where we're suffering from this. People are so far one way or another that they're not getting to. In fact, the government closed down twice last year because they couldn't even pass a budget, which is their number one job. And so I feel like there's a place for someone like me. We've experienced it here in Alaska for decades where we normally, typically, help the next person out. Anyone who's in that ditch, this is something I've known since I was born. You stop, you never even think about who they are in that car, you take care of them. We work together. That's the kind of mentality that I have, that I intend to bring when it comes to policymaking. Sure, I have my values that I'll carry that are Alaskan, but I also recognize that it's important that we're in a different time. It's not where you bully people around to get what you want. It's that you work together, you find other states with similar challenges and goals, and you work together with them. That's the way legislation is getting passed these days, the positive pieces that we're seeing. And frankly, lately, it's few and far between, but we know that that's the way we need to go. I think that's the number one thing I hear everyone get most excited about when they hear about my campaign. They'll ask me, so what party are you in? And I'll say, neither. I think it's time to just get things done. And then I hear a big sigh of relief, and then thank you, it's time.
All right, if you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and I'm Lori Townsend. My guest today in the studio is independent candidate for U.S. House, Elise Galvin. Elise is challenging Don Young. Don Young, we offered time to Mr. Young on Talk of Alaska. His campaign declined to schedule him. He will be on debate for the state on October 26th, debating Ms. Galvin in a live forum at 7 p.m. that will air statewide on radio and television. So that kind of describes why. Oh, and I should also let people know if you have questions or comments, if you'd like to call in, find out more about Ms. Galvin's platform and her ideas for what she would do if she were elected to Congress. You can call us at 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. That help describe why you're an independent rather than a Democrat or a Republican, because of your belief that it's time to give up on partisan politics mm-hmm. and try to get things done. Tell us about the skills or experiences that you have that will help you do that.
Sure. Well, where I've spent the most time in Juneau and in D.C. was around an issue that I think is nonpartisan. It's public education. So I led a group called Great Alaska Schools that started with 40 and grew to over 4,000. And yes, we were at all sides. But we cared about something in common, and that's ensuring that every single child, everyone, no matter what their zip code was, has an opportunity to a quality public education. And we had some fun with it. Sure, we had, in some issues we didn't agree. But we agreed that we needed to ensure, in fact, it wasn't just because we know it's right, it's because we know it's economically the smartest thing to do in any nation to ensure that our children are ready for jobs and are innovative, have critical thinking skills. All of those pieces we agreed upon. And so then it was, how do we come together then? What are we going to do to impact our decision makers in Juneau and in D.C.? And through that work, we found some very intentional ways to ensure that we're keeping public education on the front burner. Everyone talks about public education as being, important. Our children are our future, et cetera. But it really was important for us to talk about what legislation then needed to be passed in order to bring us closer to that, closer to more accountability, closer to more predictability, and closer to ensuring that we all feel good about living in Alaska because we know our kids are going to get the future that they should have.
If you're elected, what would your first three top priorities be in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, I think the number one piece is that we need to work on healthcare. There are some fires that we've got to put out, And then we need to work our way toward a real, true, comprehensive health care plan for each and every Alaskan. So that would be number one. Number two, I think that there's a lot of work that we can do to diversify our economy, where on the federal front, we can make a difference. And then it will also help Alaska. Pieces like infrastructure. Goodness knows, ports all along the coast, we have the longest coastline in the entire United States, would better protect Alaska. It would also open up economic opportunities for us, lower transportation costs for goods, really make a difference, and make a difference overall. And then lastly, I think that we need to think about what we can do that would grow more opportunities from cradle to career for our educational system. We have done very, very little when it comes to early learning for Alaska. In fact, we have the least amount of early learning per capita investment in the entire United States, whereas our kids at 5 years old, we have half the readiness as the rest of the United States. We have only 3 out of 10 kids walking in ready to learn, and yet the lower 48 has 6 out of 10 kids walking in. We all have work throughout the nation, but clearly we have more work to do, and that means investment. And that's going to take somebody in Washington who's ready to be a champion and thinking through, using numbers, helping people appreciate our state, our great challenges, and also our wonderful diversity, and how we need to really invest in that so that we are strong. And I think it's an important opportunity for us to have a new champion, a new voice, who's thinking a little bit differently, who's ready to think of the future. I'm proud to say I use an iPhone. I use a laptop. I understand that's how you make relations in D.C. now. Things are a little bit different nowadays, and I look forward to making those relationships in order to get things done in healthcare, in our economy, and in our education. Of course, another piece of it that's sort of an off strand, I know you only asked for three, but I want to make sure I mention public safety. A lot of people think of that as just a state issue. But when we have our families right now not only worried about whether or not our car is going to be there the next day when they need to drive themselves to work, but we have rural Alaskan communities that have zero coverage when it comes to a VPSO, a village patrol safety officer, or a state trooper. And they are minding their own villages right here in Alaska, many. I was hearing stories from Tanana Chiefs Council that would just make hair stand on your arms, because it was so shocking how little we are doing in terms of public safety for all Alaskans.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska. Elise Galvin, the independent candidate for U.S. House, is our guest today. And if you have questions or you'd like to find out more about her positions, you can call us and join the conversation at 1-800-478-8255. Statewide, 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. So let's drill down a bit into mm-hmm. some of these areas.
Sure.
And I'm not going to take them, well, I guess I am going to take them in order, because you identified healthcare as the first mm-hmm. priority for you. Tell us what you would specifically advocate for in healthcare reform, mm-hmm. and kind of start with the overall system.
Sure.
Do you want a single payer,
yeah.
or what do you
so
want to see?
So here's what we have right now. We have something called the Affordable Care Act that, frankly, is not affordable for many. Last night I heard someone mention that it's $1,300 a month for them. What happened was their spouse, they're divorced now, and their kids are on Denali Kid Care, which, by the way, is getting threatened immensely. Don Young has voted to take it away dozens of times, and pre-existing conditions. And so we have Affordable Care Act that is unfortunately not working. We've got also our expenses in pharmaceuticals that are astronomical. Those are fires that need to get put out right now. So make sure that we're not taking away what little we have right now going on, and there are things in pharmaceuticals like advocating for price reductions. We have not allowed anybody to bargain that way. And we're also not even allowed to buy what we know is less, the same drug, in other countries safely. We could be buying from Canada and Europe, and that's not happening because, unfortunately, I think that too many of our legislators right now are fearful of not getting reelected. They're fearful that they're not going to get those dollars in their pocket by these large corporations. So the different kind of candidate I am is I'm not taking a dime as I'm running for Congress because I want to make the decisions that are really, truly for the people. And this is important, especially pharmaceuticals. We also could be allowed to work across the state line to grow our pool of applicants. That would definitely lower our costs right now. And those are fires that have to get put out that I think would be workable. The president initially said he would like to lower pharmaceuticals. Well, here's your answer. Stand up and bargain for them. We've got the biggest buying power in our Medicaid and Medicare dollars. We're buying a lot of pharmaceuticals. Well, we can be doing a little bit better in terms of standing up for prices that we're willing or not willing to pay. And then there's the long-term piece that we absolutely have to fix. We need to have a comprehensive, affordable, accessible health care plan for every individual. In Alaska, it's our number one problem for our small businesses. We cannot expect them to expand and grow when many of them are spending more in health care for their employees. And I'm grateful that they're thinking about their employees and what they need, but they're spending more there than in wages. And so wages aren't growing. This is a deep problem for our entire economy. But we've got systems that are working here, too. We've got a program that's serving more than 100,000. This is the good news. We've got the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium and South Central Foundation. They have a model called the NUCA program, where for at half the cost, they are delivering a wellness model to over 100,000 Alaskans. That's a seventh of our state. And it's working, by the way. They've received international awards 3 out of the last 5 years because of the wellness outcomes. The people are happy receiving it. They've got a really excellent model that includes primary care so that people aren't running to the ER at astronomical costs. It includes mental health, it includes dental, vision, and specialist care. So that's working. I want to take a model like that, bring it to Washington, put it on the table and say, look, we've got something that's working here. Let's talk about this. Let's think about what are we going to do for every American and every Alaskan. Maybe it's that we need to offer an opportunity for us to buy into this, a program that's working. And that's something that a lot of nations have done. Not that we need to do exactly what other nations are doing, but let's be smart about it and make sure that we have a plan that's working for us. What is happening right now is inhumane.
Let's go to, we're getting some calls and emails now. Mm-hmm. Let's go to Grant, an email from, I think he said he was in Fairbanks, but I could be wrong about that. Yes. Grant in Fairbanks. He says, why is Medicare for All not a solution for health care reform? It sounds sort of like when you're talking about the NUCA model, that's not Medicare, but it is a system that treats a broader number of individuals. So what do you think about Grant's question?
Medicare
here?
For All is a bumper sticker solution that we've heard a lot on the primary campaign. I did hear that. I think it's important to recognize in Alaska, first of all, unfortunately, we're not covering the costs of services when we reimburse doctors here in Alaska or any caregiver. And so that Medicare reimbursement is not right now, covering the cost of service. So that's one issue that is important because we certainly don't want to drive out our healthcare providers. However, it is important also to recognize that Medicare, Medicaid, Indian health dollars are more efficient in many ways in that 3-8% of the dollar goes to administration for that sort of a design of healthcare program. On the other hand, with insurance right now, 25 to 35 cents on the dollar is going into administration. So that is less efficient when we know that less of our dollar in healthcare is going to care, and much more is going into care with Medicare, Medicaid, and other systems like that. So I am very open to finding a system that allows us to be more efficient, and more importantly, be more effective so that we're healthier. Because, geez, isn't that the whole goal of this? Are we healthier as a nation 50 years later since we've changed up our system? Not so much. We've got some work to do, and I'm excited that Alaska has something to bring to the table that is working.
Why do you think that is, that there's such a cost disparity between Medicare, Medicaid, mm-hmm. administrative expenses, mm-hmm. and regular healthcare settings? What's known about the why?
Corporations. The bottom line is they're looking after their bottom line. And I understand that. It's part of the way private business works. And I think that we could dig into that in details and figure out who's getting the dollars. I'm sure that there's a lot of folks who are on top. I should say a few folks on the top of the corporation making a lot. And I'm not so sure it's all of the caregivers getting all of the money, although there is some research done around specialists and whether or not that's the adequate pay that they're getting, particularly in light of the fact that so many primary caregivers are not getting anywhere near that sort of pay. In fact, a lot of them can't even cover their student loans. So we need to be smart about it. There's something in the middle. We need to ensure that we're not chasing away our caregivers, but at the same time coming up with a plan that is affordable for every Alaskan, that we have access also. We have, you know, issues given the size of our state, particularly for those who are not in the NUCA model or in Alaska Native. They are actually picking up 25% of the veteran care, which is fascinating to me. So they are already sort of modeling that they're able to scale up and utilize some partnership thinking there. And I think it's important for us to know we're resourceful people. We just need to have our heads wrapped around doing what's best for people and not necessarily what's best for corporations.
So I want to drill down on that just a bit. But first, I have an email question mm-hmm. from Jade, who says, which party would you caucus with mm-hmm. if elected?
Good question. Yeah. And I have said since the beginning, I am going to be caucusing with the Democratic Party. I will also still retain my status as an independent and be able to vote for what's best for Alaskans. And I think that's important. It's also critical to understand that it's very likely, I think every pundit that you talk to will say that the Democrats are likely to be in the majority in the House. So we will have this great opportunity for a congresswoman in the House, in the majority, and our Senate's will have also our delegation in the majority. And I look forward to working with Dan and Lisa. And I think there's a little bit of a misunderstanding about Don Young and the fact that he has so much power given his almost half a century of time there. Unfortunately, he has termed out of any position of power, although being in the minority, of course, would not allow him to have those choices of committees or being in a position of power. But in his case right now, either because of ethics or because he's timed out, he no longer can be in any position of power whatsoever when it comes to being a chair of a committee, whereas I will have nothing but potential as Alaska's new congresswoman. And being in the majority especially will give us a little bit of an edge. And I'm excited to be able to serve in that way.
Before we go back to some healthcare issues, and then, of course, there's a lot of other things to discuss in the program today. If you're just joining us, Elise Galvin, independent candidate for U.S. House, is our guest on Talk of Alaska. You can join our conversation. And right now we're going to go to the phones. Tom is in Juneau. So we're getting to the the part of the program where we're going to start taking a lot of random
All right.
questions.
Great. Sort Bring of, them on. Yeah, love it.
So Tom in Juno has a question about gun control. Okay. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, hi. Thanks very much. And Mrs. Galvin, thanks for being on the program. Mm-hmm. The Juno Empire, perhaps 2 weeks ago, said that quoted you as saying you favor wider firearms background checks. And I have to tell you, wider, or I presume that means the same to you as expanded background checks, to all the Alaskans I know, means gun registration, which is an anathema to the Alaskans I know, gun registration, and it's sort of expanded background checks is coded language to register everybody's guns. Did the Empire quote you correctly, and is wider background checks the same as expanded background checks? Thank you.
Thanks, Tom, for the question.
Yeah, thanks for asking that question. There's also another, I think, misquote around mental illness. I think it inferred that I think anyone with mental illness should not be able to have a gun. And I want to clear the record. I am absolutely in favor of our retaining our Second Amendment rights. It's really important that Alaskans maintain our way of life. And guns are a big part of it. Not only because we need it for our protein on the table, many Alaskans, but also we enjoy it for sport and for protection. So I want to make sure to clarify that. And I do think, though, that we need to see, to meet the challenge when we know that we have more than twice the amount of deaths by firearm in Alaska, as opposed to the rest of the lower 48, I'm not going to sit on my hands about that. I'm going to study it. I'm going to look at it as an issue that we need to figure out what could we do about it. I know that 21 states have laws around background checks. It makes sense for us to talk about how Alaska could be part of that. But I first of all, before anything, I want to have a study on it by experts, that we use research-based best practices decision before any sort of policy that big is put in place. So I look to ensuring that we give the CDC the job that they need to do and study this, tell us what levers are best. Frankly, I dug into it a little bit myself and found out that, yes, we are dying by more than twice the lower 48 per capita. And that's because more than half of our deaths are due to mental illness. And so what does that mean? That means we may need to put our resources in healthcare, in mental health care. And goodness knows, look at our statistics. We've needed to do this for decades. Let's step up to it. Let's have a leader who's willing to talk about it, remove the stigma of talking about mental illness or any sort of the stats that are, frankly, in our healthcare world, been shoved under the rug by our legislators. Let's talk about it. Let's make sure we're getting the resources that we need. We came in here 6 decades or so ago and brought in a lot of stuff. And I think it's time for us to be looking after our people and making sure that we are getting what is needed to heal intergenerationally. There's a lot of work to be done. And I don't think it means we need to take away our lifestyle of being a gun state. But I do think it needs that means that we need to be smart.
And just kind of following up on Tom's question.
Yeah.
Do you think that if there's going to be increased or more examination of someone's background, that this should or could result in everyone who buys a gun having to register?
If that's what CDC says will stop the amount of deaths from happening, we need to look at that. Yeah. And I don't know that that's going to be the answer. I think it's really important that we look at that we strengthen the laws that we already have on the books in the sense that we put resources on them. I know that we have some laws already that we really aren't giving the resources to make sure that we are safer. So I look after a lot of that. Frankly, you know, I think that every kid should learn more about guns. We haven't been able to think about education and what we could be doing to help us know how to handle when we go to our friend's house and we see guns. What is that? What do we do about that? You know, there's a lot to be said, really just about education.
We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with independent candidate for our sole U.S. House seat, Elise Galvin, as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Our guest today is independent candidate Elise Galvin, who is running for the U.S. House. And I want to let listeners know that we did offer time to Don Young. His campaign did not make him available for Talk of Alaska, but he will be here for debate for the state with Elise Galvin on Friday, October 26th at 7 p.m. That will go out statewide on radio and television. You can join our conversation if you have questions for Elise Galvin at 1-800-478-8255. That's statewide, 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us talk@alaskapublic.org. Let's go back to the phones for a moment. Daryl is in Holy Cross. Hi, Daryl.
Hello.
Hello. Did you have a question?
I have a comment, more or less, I applaud Elise for being independent. I think that's commendable. And my comment is on social justice for, in light of our remembrance of the Fairbanks Four. And the one part of, I think it says, we the people, and then we hold these truths to be self-evident. Then there's the Ten Commandments. I think if all people would just follow those, then everything else would fall in line.
All right. Well, thanks for the call, Daryl.
Daryl, this is Elise. Well, you are a very wise person, and I appreciate very much your thoughts. We absolutely need to hold each person up as a valuable person, no matter where they come from or what their history is. They have value to our communities, and we need to find ways of helping them see that. And there are some ways we can make some changes systemically to allow for that. Nationally, we have private prison systems that deeply concern me, because some of them have not really focused so much on how we're going to help people see the value in themselves and be able to re-enter into their communities and be able to give something back and see that they are doing that. We have, unfortunately, not really focused on how we're going to help people with mental illness re-enter into the community when they're getting their treatment as well. So I think there's a lot of ways we can ensure that we have a more systemic plan for that. And I look forward to talking about that in D.C. And I will be representing you, Daryl. I'll keep you in my heart. I'll keep the four people in Fairbanks in my heart. Boy, do we have a lot to learn. And if we can learn from our history and bring that into policy making that makes sense for our future, won't that be something?
Let's. I want to get on to just a couple more health-related questions, and then let's move on to economy and job development. You're pro-choice. What do you want to see to enhance access to reproductive health care for mm-hmm. women? What would you like to see in that regard?
I also want to make it pretty clear that I'm also pro-life. I really believe personally that it's important that we evaluate, that we are able to, in the sense that we honor each person's life and make sure that they safely have access to women's health care is critical. And I know people call those terms different things, but to me, I am one who believes that every single person needs to be educated about their body in a very age-appropriate way, from youth up, and that will help us a lot. If people don't want to see abortions, then what they need to do is make sure that we ensure that we have access to education and tools. That means we need to know how to get to preventative health care. And there's a lot out there for us. And in all over Alaska, we need to make sure we're getting those resources accessible to everyone. And I think you had a second part to your question that I'm not answering.
Well, I just asked what you'd like to see to enhance access to reproductive health care for women, if you have specific ideas in that regard about health care.
Yeah. Well, let's be clear that we are not seeing we're seeing women's access be peeled apart. We're already taking away the rights for many to be able to even have birth control. Are you kidding me? This is really a big issue. In fact, it's oppressive to women, and it's going to cause a lot of economic problems when we don't give women access to what they should have. And men. Men need to be educated, too, to know what are safe practices. We have the highest chlamydia here in Alaska right now. When have you heard a legislator say the word chlamydia? We need to be smart about this. We need a legislator who is willing to talk about gonorrhea, chlamydia, when we're having these problems. This is a health care emergency, and we need resources to help ensure that. And right now, insurance is peeling off our opportunity. We used to have birth control as part of our insurance, and we've taken that off the table. That's being threatened. Everything to do with women's health care is getting threatened. And frankly, I find it offensive and frightening that it's mostly white men who are making the decisions around women's health care. We have 19.2% of women in Congress. And I think it's time for us to have more representation to ensure that we have a better variety of people making decisions around our health care. It's critical.
Let's move on to some economic development ideas. You've said that you'd like to see construction of deep water, large vessel ports. Mm-hmm. Where and how many?
Well, I think it's important that we listen to the communities and we listen to the experts in the military. But there are some communities who are ready. I know I've spoken to, Kotzebue. It's around 12 miles out of Kotz, but they certainly have developed a plan and they really, truly are looking for that. The literage fees for goods to come into their community are especially high, and this may really make a difference there. And also, of course, you know, we don't really have much up there for deep water ports to allow for, or for any ports, actually, to allow for larger vessels. And it will create an opportunity for our military to also have access. And like I said, great opportunity for more goods to come in that would be less expensive. Similarly, Homer would like to see another large vessel port. Our port in Anchorage needs to have more infrastructure, and it needs to be modernized. 45% of our goods are running through there. Gosh, if we have any sort of a real emergency, we're going to be in trouble. We really need to look after that. And again, it's not just for our goods. It's also for our national security. So those are a couple. Nome is another one. Kodiak would like to see it. So really, frankly, it's up and down the coast. And, sorry, I just wanted to mention, because it's really important that we think of the most relevant news of the day or of the last few weeks has been the tariffs and how that's affected our ports. In Anchorage alone, it's affected because the I'm sure you're aware the president has said, look, I'm going to single-handedly put in these tariffs, and he sort of started a trade war. Well, what happened because of that to Alaska, not only are our fisheries affected, but anybody using steel who had had, you have to put in your orders years in advance, for example, for the port to get fixed up right now. It's been eroding and corroding. And so they ended up having to spend hundreds of millions more just this last week, I heard this, because of the tariffs that have been put in place. And Don Young actually has said nothing about this. Nobody's holding our president accountable for some of these decisions that are deeply affecting us. And so I look forward to being there and standing up.
Back to economic development and jobs. We had a question from, I'm trying to see who it's from. Well, they didn't put their name in here, but this is someone who's asking about young people in their 20s and 30s who are educated within the Alaska public education system, attended college in the lower 48, now possess higher level education and skills and they that are needed to work in the resource development area. They would love to return to Alaska, this person says, but there are no jobs for their skill level. What can Elise Galvin do to help the infrastructure of Alaska to get connected so that the next generation of job skills can take root in Alaska?
Yeah, thanks for asking that question. There actually is a great opportunity for us, and I'm going to talk about climate change here. And I know it seems like an offshoot, and it's one of those things where we're seeing whole communities drop into the water, and it's horrible. But at the same time, we've got an opportunity for some job growth if we see it as opportunity. We here in Alaska are experiencing climate change ground zero. And with that, we also have our university system up and down the coast are studying this with really excellent research. And what we're finding is that we know we're the most referred to university system in the world around climate change. We have ideas of things to do with that. And some of it is changing up the way we're building homes. Some of it is utilizing energy in different ways. We still haven't gotten our heads wrapped around tidal energy, for example. So there's lots of stuff to be happening there if we were to invest in those pieces. We've got tidal, we've got wind, we've got solar, we have things around hydro, that, and we're doing it in different ways. What we need to do is make sure that we're investing in some of these infrastructure pieces that help us to mitigate and adjust to climate change so that we can grow the job opportunities for people just like the one who is written in. They're smart. They're ready. We need to be retraining and reworking. Yes, we're going to maintain the jobs that we have in natural resources for decades. But as we diversify, we need to make sure that those kids that you were just reading from, and I know they're young adults, but that they have the hope that there are meaningful jobs available for them. And that's going to take someone in Congress looking after growing those by way of investing and adjusting to climate change in ways that we have got to get our heads wrapped around. We need to be ahead of the game, not behind the ball.
Let's take a quick email question, and then we're going to go back to the phones. Eric asks, what is your position on ballot measure one and why?
So that's a state issue. I'm sure you're aware of
as
that.
As an Alaskan, though, what's your thoughts on
that? I'm not going to weigh in on how to vote on that, but I will weigh in on habitat and salmon. I think that that's really the question is where my values are. And I firmly believe that this is a state where we need to auger in and make some systemic changes to allow us to ensure that we have opportunities not only to keep our forever fish, but also to have meaningful ways to our economic growth. So we need to find some balance there. People have asked me about pebble. I have already come out publicly. I am an anti-pebble mine. I think it's with our technology right now, it is entirely too risky to put our forever resource of our fish, which is, by the way, as you know, a world renowned economic resource for us. And so I do not support that mine in that location. I do support bringing back the Alaska Coastal Management Program, which was a very unique
Coastal Zone Management.
Yeah,
yes.
Coastal, it's the ACMP, the Alaska Coastal Management Program. And what it did was, if there is any infrastructure that in any way was near water, there was an allowance for community members to have a real systemic way of having input. That got taken away by Lisa Murkowski's father years ago, and that should some system like that should be brought back. And I look forward to being a proponent for bringing it back. I will help in whatever way is possible, because Alaskans need to, in fact, anywhere in America, when we know that we're balancing economic growth over our environmental forever resources, we need to really be smart about it and allow for local input, and not just input, but science-based input as well, and really being smart about it. And I think there is a way for us to have that balanced approach.
We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll go back to the phones and take more questions with independent U.S. House candidate Elise Galvin as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Funding for Talk of Alaska was made possible in part by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority and listeners just like you. Thank you. And by Matson, committed to the communities it serves, building on more than 50 years of service to the communities of Alaska. Learn more at Matson.com.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Let's go back to the phones. We are talking with Elise Galvin in the studio today. She is an independent candidate for U.S. House. We're going to go to the phones now. Bryson is in Anchorage. Hi, Bryson.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
I want to start off by saying thank you for your comments about economic diversification. It's something that I think about a lot when I'm thinking of my future up here, so it's really nice to see that you're thinking about that too. And I wanted to ask your views on Housing First initiatives to help with the homeless and substance abuse issues that we face in Anchorage.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So this is predominantly an Anchorage movement, but I think that we're learning from other states about how we can best address homelessness. And I think it's a smart movement that we're getting into, where we're helping our folks who are still dealing with addictions and other issues, but allowing them a place to live. So many of our homeless are not comfortable coming into using resources because in the past they had to be sober before they were allowed any opportunities for homelessness. And this is a unique and important way for us to grow opportunities for every individual in Alaska to find themselves into a safe, warm home, which, of course, we would want for everyone. And I think that we need to use new approaches, and particularly looking at what's working. I think it was Texas where they had modeled it, and they reduced their homeless list by 67% or some really incredible number. And I appreciate that we are now thinking about, and in fact, we have a couple of models already that are working that are on small scale. And I'm glad to hear that things are moving on a bigger scale. And I do support federal supports for that. I know that in the past they've used some HUD money and other monies for that. And I fully would support whatever I could do to make a difference there.
Let's go. Thanks for the call, Bryson. Let's stay with the phones for a moment. Faye is in Copper Center. Hello.
Hello.
Do you have a question, Faye?
I have a question, and I want to know how Ms. Galvin feels about tribal sovereignty and our traditional knowledge included in the policies that's made to our people in Alaska. That is mostly affected is the people in the rural areas and the boroughs and them municipalities. They have federally funds that helps them with us with their way of life. Where I come from, in the Copper River, we don't have the convenience of running water and sewer. all these convenience of a city and we're still living in a poverty level. I want to know how, Ms. Galvin, are you going to support the tribal sovereignty that's being threatened by the Trump administration and our funding? Mm-hmm. Are you in support of us and including us in traditional knowledge? That's what I wanted to know.
Thanks for the call, Faye. And I'm glad that she brought that issue up because I wanted to get to a question about how and should the federal government work more directly with tribes to support local law enforcement in off-the-road communities. So take Faye's question first about tribal sovereignty and your thoughts on that, and then let's talk about law enforcement.
Yeah, I fully support the efforts that are moving in tribal sovereignty, and they are happening in a few different ways. One is in our court system. There are some tribal courts that are moving along. I have a good friend who is a judge that has been working to grow a tribal court system and in many of the different areas. And I think we need to move that further. I also support the work that's happening in healthcare, where we are compacting and really growing more sovereignty and listening to the experts who are in each community in ways that needed to happen long ago, frankly. And similarly, there's been talk about how we can grow more independence in and even compacting in education. And I think that it's very critical that we do that as well. Clearly, what we have is not working. And so it's time for us to open up to new ways and new ways that need to be decided upon by the people, the local people, and we need to honor that. In every community where I visit, I first meet with the tribal councils, and then I meet with those various shelters that are in the communities. I meet with the educators, I meet with the healthcare providers, and then the native corporations. So I've been really listening to how people are looking for new ways, because right now people are not feeling as though they're being honored, and it is very, it is a puzzle that needs to get put together. And when you were talking, I think you also mentioned public safety officers.
Yes, and the federal government's direct relationship with tribes. Mm-hmm. Should there be mm-hmm. more, should that be enhanced from your perspective to include more money for
Absolutely.
Tribal police forces?
And for training, especially right now, the training is happening out of state that's free to Alaska Native communities. It's in Arizona, and it's not really that easy for people to get down there and get that. We also have an opportunity in Alaska if we were to put money there from the federal level, and I think we need to do a lot more. Sitka has another area. It's a lot of money to train a trooper, for example, over $200,000. And it's a big investment that's really important, because if we do it among our own, they end up staying. Too many of the times we are ending up importing into communities. And a lot of that is because it's the culture is awkward to have their own become. But I think if we start growing that culture from a very young age, it's working well. For example, in our STEM area, we've grown our own engineers now through using the ANSET program, Alaska Native Science and Engineering. Well, we should be doing that also for public safety officers, for our healthcare providers, and for our educators. We are spending so much money importing, 70% of our educators, and an enormous amount in healthcare as well. We have some regional vocational hubs where we're growing more skills. It's not that they're not don't have the capability and the skills. It's that we haven't allowed them to design their own ways of doing this. And I think that we need to be much more supportive of the locals deciding on their own and growing more of their own sovereignty, which means letting it go. Sometimes government needs to get out of the way.
I want to get one more question in. We only have a couple minutes left. Wages.
Mm-hmm.
The retail giant Amazon just announced it will pay all of its workers, even part-time workers, $15 an hour. Some states have raised their minimum wage. The federal minimum wage is $7.25 an hour, hasn't been raised since 2009. Mm-hmm. What do you think it should be, and should lawmakers be paid the wage they pass for the rest of the country?
Wow, that's great. Okay, so let me start with this. The wages are not high enough, not nearly high enough. And in Bethel, a minimum wage would need to be twice that for them to be able to afford to live there if they were not getting any federal services. And so the problem is that in Alaska, 15 I don't think would be enough even. So we really need
for
to—
For a federal minimum wage?
For a federal minimum wage, it would be great. But in Alabama, if we were to get health care fixed, and that wasn't part of the equation, in Alabama and other southern states, that might be more than what a small business could afford. I would want to look into that. Or maybe we would have exceptions for different states. Alaska, 15 isn't nearly enough in many parts of Alaska. It's not. I mean, we wouldn't be able to afford an apartment, health care, which is our big issue. So I would want to study that more to know what the minimum would be, and do we have exceptions for different states that clearly need more, or for small businesses where that wouldn't work out. I would want to really study that. I know that for sure our problem right now is that we need to ensure that our families are working, are able to get a job that gives them a real livable wage. That's what I like to talk about. And we have unions here that are doing a great job because they are they're advocating in ways that make sure that not only do our workers have safe workplaces, but that they're also livable wages. So I have been endorsed by many unions here, the IBEW, the pilots, the masters, mates, and pilots, the healthcare, the Unite Here, which is hotels, the food and commercial workers, the NEA, all of them, because they know I appreciate, and AFT, I should add, and I appreciate how important minimum wage is. It's critical.
And in the last few seconds here, so just to be clear, mm-hmm. you're wanting to study a plan that may say the wage is $15 an hour in one state, but maybe the federal minimum wage is only $10 an hour in another state?
No, I don't know what it would look like. All I know is that we need to make sure that everybody has a living wage, that it's living. And that means that they still have housing, health care, that they can put food on the table, and that they work 40 hours a week. What disturbs me right now is so many people, so even Amazon, we're going to pay $15 an hour to our part-time workers. Well, a lot of those workers at Amazon, I bet you, are working three and four jobs a day, three or four jobs. And the reason why is that isn't enough to make ends meet. If you need to also pay for your health care and your housing, in many of the cities right now, that's not enough.
All right. Thanks to my guest today, U.S. House candidate, independent Elise Galvin has been our guest. We did offer time to Don Young. His campaign did not make him available for Talk of Alaska, but he will be on hand on October 26th at 7 p.m. for a live debate for the state with Elise Galvin. That will be at 7 p.m. statewide on radio and television. I'm Lori Townsend. We'll be back next week.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. This program is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400. This is Alaska Public Media.